Lonnie, if you want to.
Okay.
Okay, our speaker, Michael Kay, will now share their experience for 20 minutes on the first half of Bill's story. Go ahead, Michael.
Thanks, Amy, and thanks, Lonnie, for inviting me. Good to see quite a few good friends, new friends, and maybe even newer friends after this. So, I'm Michael. I'm a meth addict and an alcoholic and a seeker of emotional sobriety. I had a lot of sex, love, and attachment issues come up in recovery and have had to work the 12 steps on those as well. And I'm living recovered today. I am living recovered. This emotional sobriety walk that I'm currently in is not necessarily a straight line, but it is far better than I've ever been able to experience in my life on my own power. So I'm going to keep doing it. And today I'm going to talk from Bill's story. I'm going to try and read some of it, but keep it to 20 minutes, I think. 20 minutes? Yeah. Okay. Here we go. All right. If you've done the Big Book Awakening once or twice, this is going to ring a bell. War fever ran high in the New England town to
So,
which us.
did you want a reminder or
Yeah,
anything?
5 minutes. 5 minutes. Give me just a warning there. To which we new young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned. And we were flattered when the first citizens took us into their homes, making us feel heroic. I wasn't in the war. I wasn't in New England. There's a lot of things that the first few times reading Bill's story, I couldn't relate to. And there's many of them at face value I can't relate to. But the way we walk through the work and turn statements into questions and a really experienced, patient person that walked me through it, I find a lot more relatable today. As I was driving here to my office, kind of contemplating being with you guys here, you know, the 80s were a pretty impressive and heroic time for some of us. And that's, I'm dating myself here, but, you know, there was crazy hair, half-shaved heads, wild music that sometimes didn't even sound like music, new drugs, old drugs, craziness abounded. And there was this, once again, you know, every decade or so, it's a rebellious time. Anything to be against the man or against the system, right? And it was that kind of rebellious punk feeling. And yes, I was energized by that. And I fell in with some people like that. And wow, they had some drugs. In my case, it started off more with drugs than it did alcohol, but alcohol and drugs are very much part of my story. And then with and without drugs, here's how I was living. Love, applause, war, you know, either conflict or emotional conflict or outright war. Moments sublime, quiet, powerful moments. With intervals hilarious. Sounds a bit chaotic, doesn't it? Anybody find that relatable? Yeah. And that was me. Before I found drugs and after I found drugs, I was part of life at last. In the midst of this excitement, I discovered liquor and drugs. I forgot the strong warnings and the prejudices of my people concerning drugs in my case. I come from a family of pretty heavy drinkers, but the drugs were off the table because my biological died of a drug overdose and was always a drug addict, and that's why he wasn't in my picture. So there were some strong warnings and prejudices about drug use, and it didn't matter. I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol. There were many times when I was lonely and I turned to people, to drugs, to alcohol, and really difficult coping strategies. You know, instead of growing out of my problems, I grew into them. Much moved, I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a doggerel on an old tombstone. And then we have this trivial verse here that he talks about, hey, you know, a hero can be taken out by war, or he can be taken out by alcoholism, or, you know, the bad pot of beer there. Ominous warning, which I failed to heed. So how many ominous warnings did I have? Was it the first time I started to have a legal consequence? Was it the first time I started to have a family consequence around my drinking and using and carousing? Was it the second or third or the dozenth time that I was having consequences around the way I was living? Many ominous warnings. You know, the first time I woke up in my own, you know, pit and vomit is kind of an ominous warning, right? And it's funny, later we're going to look at self-knowledge is going to not really avail us anything. The self-knowledge starts in that very first time when I wake up in my own puke. I'm starting to catch on that something happens to me after I drink and use that I don't see happening in the people around me. I may not have the big book words for it or experience from the big book, but that's self-knowledge right there at 17 when that first starts happening. 20, I'm getting my first arrest for, you know, drunk driving. I'm not even legal age drinking. That's an ominous warning. Failed to heed. Some of them I just blew through because I didn't care, but other ones, I was already at the point where my drug use and my alcoholism was pretty much unstoppable by any human power, especially mine. But I was kind of the last one to know. I fancied myself a leader. Nah, not really, but I really thought everybody should have listened to me. I mean, definitely thought y'all should have been listening to my ideas. They were getting me into such trouble. You should have come with me. Took a night law course, page 2. Obtained employment as an investigator for a surety company. The drive for success was on. Even in my drug addiction and my alcoholism, I was trying to get better. I was trying to, you know, trying to emulate what I was seeing other people do. Other people go to work and make money and get things. So I was trying. I wasn't real good at it, but I was trying. I'd prove to the world that I was important. That's an important sentence for me. I would prove to the world that I was important because I did not feel that way on my own. And that, you know, definitely comes from a lot of carryover stuff from my early childhood. But at some point, I'm a grown adult going around trying to prove to the world that I'm somebody because I feel like nothing. Many people lost money, but some became very rich. Why not me? Why not me? I studied economics and business as well as law. Potential alcoholic or addict that I was, I nearly failed my law course. One of the finals, I was too drunk to think or write. Though my drinking was not yet continuous, it disturbed my wife. We had long talks when I would still her forebodings by telling her that men of genius conceive their best projects when drunk. The most majestic constructions of philosophical thought was so derived. I don't know, the drunk artist, the drunk musician or whatever. I didn't have the big book explanation for it, but I was trying to sell it anyways. So it seems to be a pretty common theme there. You know, hey, honey, don't worry about it. I'm going to be a drunk artist. You're no good at art, Michael. I know, but I'm going to keep trying and keep drinking, right? You can't play the guitar for shit, but I'm going to keep trying to be a drunk musician. You know, I mean, the common theme there is alcohol, right? By the time I had completed the course, and yes, I did some college work, I knew that the law was not for me. So I would dive into a project and I would do a semester or so and find out it was not for me. Not so much that it was not for me, but the second semester was not for me, right? I had a great, great knack for starting things and not finishing them. The inviting maelstrom of Wall Street, money, cash, success had me in its grip. I worshiped success and prestige, and it really was a lot defined by money, really. Out of this alloy of drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. So this drink, this drug, this emerging addiction, maybe I was already a full-blown addict. I didn't put it on the calendar. I don't know when I crossed the line. But out of that drink, that drug addiction and speculation, that drive for something, was the boomerang that eventually would come back and kick my ass. I stopped drinking for any amount of time, and the self-centeredness gets so loud that I have to do something to take the edge off of it. I'm sorry, I thought I turned my ring off. And it this addiction and this self-centeredness and this desire to make something of myself comes back, and it's killing me, and I can't stop. Let's see. He buys some stocks. I did try different businesses, including different jobs, to try and pull it off, you know, stand up and act like a normal guy. It always was followed by some kind of alcoholism or some return to addiction. You know, things would get pretty good. I'd get just a little bit, enough money in the bank to pay the bills on time this finally. And then I would return to alcohol, and I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why. Then Bill and Lois do some interesting and a bit crazy things. They give up their positions and they roar off. I can't relate to that. I stayed very close to home, so in case I ran out of money, I could always run back to mommy's house, right? So I can't relate to that part too much, but I did have a lot of crazy ideas. I can relate to that. Page three. Next few years, fortune through money and applause my way, I had arrived. My judgment and the ideas were followed by many to the tune of paper millions, imaginary millions, or potential millions. The great boom of the late 20s was seething and swelling. Did alcohol take an important, exhilarating part of my life? So I look back when I'm reading this page, and I look back, when did drugs and alcohol take a more important or exhilarating part of my history, or in my case, my addiction to people? And one part where it shifted was I had a we had a child very young, so it shifted from drugs to just hardworking, putting money on the, putting money in our lives and taking care of the daughter. And then as soon as I got to the weekend, I would drink because now I'm not on drugs. Now I'm just a drinker. And that was in my family, at least socially acceptable. But it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I didn't understand why. I would always return to those things that I kind of decided not to do. I made a, a solemn promise in heart and in action to my daughter to raise her. And then I couldn't follow through with it. I couldn't follow through with it. I could get to be a real good dad. I could start to pay off some of the bills. I could stand up for a while, and then the alcohol would creep back in. And then, even though I said I would never, ever do methamphetamines again, I would find myself doing that again. And here the cycle would repeat over and over again. So I had some success, but it was always followed by this desperate return to addiction. And I couldn't understand it. Another divorce and then a change of place. For me, it wasn't golf. For me, I actually became a workaholic for a while. Between alcohol and and hard work, I kind of distracted myself just enough to not return to the street drugs, and had a few more kids, and I got into this kind of hypervigilance with my alcohol, where I wouldn't drink during the day because I was at work, and then I would pick up my kids, I would go home, and I would start drinking once I was home, because only alcoholics drink at work, right? If I'm only drinking at home, I'm not an alcoholic, was the kind of the reasoning that I was using. And it's delusional. I can't see the truth from the false at this point. I'm also going in front of the mirror and trying to check and see which side of my liver is on because I think I have a fatty liver from the quantities of alcohol I'm drinking, but yet I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink at work. A year later, guys, nobody's going to be surprised. A year later, I'm trying to get the bottle out of the cupboard at work because now I'm drinking at work. Now I'm drinking at work. So this is part of Bill's story too. And I didn't read some of the sentences that pointed to it, but look for them as you go through your own reading if you haven't, is, and it got worse. Things get worse and it got worse. This had to be stopped. The progressive nature of Bill's story is now the progressive nature of, my alcoholism and my addiction. So the markets go to hell in 29. Bill says, wow, that's a shame for everybody who lost all their money. I lost a little bit of money too, but I still got booze, so I'm going to get drunk right now. Page later, he's talking about getting back on track. Maybe the market's getting a little bit on track. He puts together a few people to have this promising business deal, and he gets drunk and goes off on a run and loses that too. He's starting to use a little bit of fear. He's starting to use a little bit of self-knowledge, and he thinks it's supposed to work, and he can't figure out why he keeps getting drunk. Bottom of page five. Shortly afterwards, I come home drunk. No fight, no high resolve. I simply didn't know. The reasons for not drinking, or the self-knowledge, or even the fear hadn't come to mind. Someone pushed a drink my way. I'd taken it. Was I crazy? I begin to wonder. So, several parts in my story, I'm shifting from drugs to alcohol and workaholism. I'm trying to figure this out, and I end up there over and over again. And I do feel crazy at some point. Last night, didn't I say I was never going to do this again? This morning, didn't I say I was never going to do this again? Why am I pulling into the liquor store parking lot? Why? Am I crazy? And at some point, I'm drinking with my kids in the car, and it's just, Every bottom becomes a new basis for my addiction. And then it gets worse. And then it gets worse. Now we're on page six, and let's see here. It says, now the market crashes again, and Bill has gone from, hey, alcohol is still a solution, to now on page six, the market's gone to hell, and he's actually seen the market's going to recover, but now he feels doomed. Alcohol is still what he's treating his life with, but he realizes it's no longer a solution, and he's done for. He can't get out of it. And I too, the last 3 years of my drinking, every morning I would get up. I'm never going to do it again. I'm never going to do it again. 5 minutes. Did I get a 5 minute warning yet? Okay, good, good. Every morning I'd get up and I'd swear
Yes.
I'm never going to do it again. And I would, try and make it till 5 o'clock, and I would do it again. There were days I would wake up and like Bill too, cursing himself and wanting to end it all. There were days when I did want to commit suicide. I wanted to off myself, but there were other days when I just wanted it all to end. Anybody relate to that? I just want this to stop. And that's Bill too. He's like, just stop. I want it all to end, and I can't even do that. Thank God. The mental torture. So hellish. I fear I might burst through my window, sash and all. He's actually trying to take himself to a lower floor because he's afraid he's going to jump out the window. I think he's so crazy too that he's on the second floor. He's not even going to kill himself, but he's afraid. So he drags his mattress to the lower floor. The doctor starts prescribe for him. Now he's taking drugs and alcohol, just anything to get him by. I can relate to that too. There were many times when I was trying vitamins. I don't know that looking back on, I don't even know how that was going to work, but I was trying vitamins to get off booze. I was trying vitamins to feel better, supplements. Oh my gosh. Self-help books. I tried like a dozen of those. Well, I didn't try a dozen. I bought a dozen. I maybe tried four. Okay. Right. Can you relate to that? I bought a dozen, but I only tried about three self-help books, to be honest. And he's got more self-knowledge here. It's not helping him out. The frightful day comes when he's got all the evidence that I had in the last couple of years of my drinking, and he still can't stop. He drinks again. The curve of his declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. This never meant too much to me until I read it slowly. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. For the longest time, all I read was the curve of my health fell off like a ski jump. Now that I read that he says his moral health fell off like a ski jump, I can very much relate to that. The last couple of years of my drinking, I think what Bill's saying here is my moral health fell off like a ski jump. I'm now doing things that I was not raised to do, that I don't want to do. And I can't believe I'm doing it anyways. And that I find really relatable, Bill. I find that really relatable, Bill. I mean, how many years was it that I just hated myself? I just hated myself. Now he's talking about the Undertaker, the asylum. I was on the edge of that. I didn't realize how close to the edge of the cliff my entire family was, but I was trembling. He steps out of the hospital. Fear sobers him a bit. Just about once, maybe twice a year in the last few years of my drinking, I would have some incident where I caused a ruckus or even got arrested or something. And then fear would sober me for a bit. It would look good for, last time I got 2 full weeks, 2 full weeks of white knuckling it because fear sobered me. And I was so proud of that 2 weeks, I went and got drunk, as we do, right? That was my solution to it. So I'm going to end with this. Near the end of that bleak November, and if you've heard my story enough today, you know that I got to my own bleak November, and I hope each of us get to our own bleak November. I don't mean that in a mean-hearted way, but if I don't get to that bleak November where it's nothing left but me and the alcohol, and I can't get behind it, or the drugs, or the food, or the people, or whatever it is, and I sit there and I realize I can't do anything about this on my own power, that is my bleak November. And that makes me really receptive to a message of depth and weight and hope. And Ebby gets to come in and do it. Makes me emotional. Like I was living like this bleak November for several years, just waiting for some kind of message of hope. And Ebby brings that. He was sober. He was sober. And he brings a message of hope. And when I got that message of hope, I thought y'all were crazy. But it was so much better than the way I was living. And I was just willing to listen to you guys and do a few things that you guys said. So I hope my experience with Bill's story today has helped someone. And thank you so much for letting me share. I appreciate being with you guys.